Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. On today's JX, we're addressing a growing problem in the media industry that's become a plague. About a month ago, Oregon Public Broadcasting reporter Ryan Haas produced an alarming account of the digital hijacking of a once-beloved, award-winning local newspaper, the Ashland Daily Tidings. Phantom operators using AI, artificial intelligence, to impersonate reporters and local stories recreated the Daily Tidings in digital form, which had officially ceased to exist in 2023 after the loss of the regional newspaper, the Medford Mail Tribune. Established in 1876, the Daily Tidings was a local newspaper for Ashland, Oregon that became a central part of the public square. It covered local news, politics, sports, and entertainment. And on its opinion pages, it carried the seemingly endless controversies and protests within this inclusive and often eclectic university town, which boasts world-renowned entertainment venues with active and engaged residents who care deeply about the environment of their idyllic enclave nestled in the foothills of Mount Ashland. The AI impersonation of the Ashland Daily Tidings is an effort to deceive local residents. And it also undermines the integrity and trust in local media. But this problem isn't isolated to Ashland. The creation of an AI-generated zombie of the deceased Daily Tidings is an indicator of a much larger problem facing the landscape of local media across the state of Oregon and our entire nation. Joining me to discuss this issue on the Exchange is OPB reporter Ryan Haas. Welcome, Ryan.
Hey, Mike.
Later on, we'll be joined by JPR's own reporter, Justin Higginbottom. His work was directly impacted by phantom AI operators, and he'll share that story. You, our listeners, can also join the conversation by email at jx@jeffnet.org. So, Ryan, let's start with the story you wrote. It's titled, AI Slop is Already Invading Oregon's Local Journalism. What prompted that story?
I was prompted by this story because I work here at Oregon Public Broadcasting as both an investigative reporter and as an editor. And I had some staff members come to me who said, hey, I wrote a story and I see it, you know, some version of this appearing on this website, the Ashland Daily Tidings. And I had been aware of the Ashland Daily Tidings as, you know, a well-respected newspaper in the state. And so I started looking into that because typically when I see something like this, someone taking OPB's work or any journalistic work that's being produced here in Oregon, I reach out and I say, you know, hey, can you not do that? Or could you take that down or give us credit, you know, if you're going to use our work? And what I found as I started looking into this is that this website was bizarre. There was no human contact, which is just, you know, unheard of in the 21st century when it comes to journalistic organization. And so I wanted to get to the bottom of it. I was like, who is behind taking these stories and republishing them on this website?
So you invested a lot of time to pursue real reporters whose bylines appeared on the Zombie Daily Tidings website, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the one like part of this website where there were what appeared to be real people was the contributors page. There were actual bylines associated with these stories. And so I just started, you know, digging into the backgrounds of the people who were listed on this website. And what I found was that some of them didn't appear to be real people at all. They had very, very little online presence, which is fairly unheard of. And, you know, I couldn't even track down where some of these alleged reporters had worked before. But then what I also found was some of these folks were actual journalists, some who worked in the Rogue Valley. And I reached out to them and I said, hey, do you work for this paper? And they said, what are you talking about? No, I've never heard of this paper. So
you also found people outside the country.
That's right. Three of the reporters who were listed on the Ashland Daily Tidings website actually live and work in the United Kingdom. And so that struck me as bizarre. I mean, it's not impossible. When I was first reporting this, I thought it's not impossible that somebody, you know, moved to Ashland and now they're working for the local news outlet. But as I reached out to them, I encountered one man named Joe Minahane, who was an author and a travel writer. And he was listed on the Daily Tidings website as an outdoors reporter. And he at first was kind of skeptical. He said, oh, you know, I write stuff and sometimes it gets syndicated in the U.S. It's probably that. And I told him, I said, no, you should actually look at this. And when he did, he said, oh my gosh, they're stealing my identity and pretending like I work for this website.
So this has gone beyond plagiarism. Now this is into stolen identity.
Right, exactly. That's what struck me as so unique about this situation, because, you know, I think most people are familiar with AI or just general copyright theft that takes place on the internet. And so that's not necessarily a new thing. But the fact that this website was taking real people's identities and pretending that they lived in Ashland and were reporters there, that to me felt new and alarming, frankly.
Well, Ryan, your story also included a lot of data regarding the declining conditions of local media across the state and the nation. What did you find?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I have to give thanks to my editor, Anna Griffin, because when I wrote this story originally, my first draft didn't include a lot of that data. And she said, no, I think you should take some extra time to explain the decline of the news industry to people. And, you know, it's a story I'm very familiar with because I've worked in newspapers and the media for 20 years before I became to public media. And, you know, as I dug into the data, it just reiterated what my lived experience was, which a lot of newspapers, particularly looking at Oregon's landscape, have just cut jobs over the last two decades. I think there's something like half or less of the number of journalists working in Oregon as there were, you know, around 2000. And so what that means is that a lot of these news landscapes are really stressed. I mean, I think your listeners probably know JPR provides a very valuable news service and you know, works with great reporters there who are doing their best to cover as much news as possible. But, you know, a lot of newsrooms aren't that lucky, and they're even smaller staff than Jefferson Public Radio is. And so they're not able to meet the news needs of these communities. So you have people looking for information online, and these scammers behind the Daily Tidings website probably saw an opportunity and said, hey, we can fill that gap where the news media has declined.
Yeah, recent reports show that more than half of the counties in the United States are media deserts with either little or no local media. So we're very fortunate because our community does support JPR in the work here and our award-winning news team. My guest is Ryan Hass, a reporter with the Oregon Public Broadcasting. Later on, we'll be joined by a member of JPR's own award-winning news team, Justin Higginbottom. You can also join the conversation by sending your comments or questions by email at jx@jeffnet.org. So, Ryan, your story provides some level of detail regarding the business demise of the Ashland Daily Tidings. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I think, you know, listeners to your program are probably familiar with the Medford Mail Tribune and the Ashland Daily Tidings. And in 2017, a businessman named Steve Saslow, who had worked in media on the East Coast for many years, came in and bought those papers from Gatehouse Media, which eventually became Gannett. And, you know, he sort of came in and wanted to, by his account, revitalize those papers or try something different because he saw the business sort of collapsing where advertisers weren't spending as much money to support local news. And so he came in and wanted to try to merge essentially a newspaper operation with video production and other forms where they might be able to package to advertisers to support that business. But ultimately that didn't work out. They tried all these experiments and they sort of changed up the Mail Tribune and the Daily Tidings and tried to present them as a new thing, but advertisers didn't ultimately buy. And his company, Rosebud Media, ended up closing, as you said at the top of the segment, in 2023. You know, they retrenched the Daily Tidings over time, and eventually those papers closed. And what is interesting is I was actually just down in Ashland recently, and I stopped by the headquarters of Rosebud Media in Medford, and I saw you know, the Daily Tidings and the Mail Tribune decals are still on that building. So in a lot of ways, it's like this ghost operation that is still there. And it's sad. I mean, it's sad that these papers and the Bedford Mail Tribune had won a Pulitzer Prize, you know, that these papers are gone now.
Well, how did you go about trying to find out who's behind this?
Mm-hmm. I went to some pretty big lengths. I reached out to a lot of sources I know who are technical experts and said, hey, can you help me figure out who's behind this website? Because, you know, I reached out through this website's contact form and an email that they had on the website, but obviously I didn't hear back because this is a scam. And so these folks weren't willing to talk to me. And so I reached out to some technical experts. I reached out to Google and some of these bigger ad companies that are putting advertising on this website and said, hey, can you help me figure out who this is? And, you know, ultimately the conclusion that I was able to come to after talking to those folks, as well as Steve Saslow, the former owner of Rosebud Media, is that this is likely coming from overseas. Similar scams I was able to find have been perpetrated like this, where someone operating overseas essentially opens a website that appears to be a local American news source and then gathers advertising revenue off of that website. And, you know, it may not be a lot of advertising revenue, but, you know, if you're living overseas, maybe getting a few hundred or $1,000 a month, it could be a helpful income. It may not cover everything for you, but it might be a good enough source of income that it's worth doing.
So there are folks who are using AI as a way to exploit media deserts and areas, well, where there, I don't consider Ashland a media desert.
Correct.
But we have lost our newsprint, and so that was capitalized by bad actors.
And I think what's interesting is that, I think you're touching on a really interesting point, is that Ashland is actually a very engaged community as far as it goes as local news. I think there are a lot of people there who care about local news and want to know what's going on. And so in some ways, these scammers are almost exploiting that investment. So there's this retrenchment of the local media, but you still have an audience who is eager to know what's going on. And so it's a ripe opportunity for someone to come in and pretend to be the local media.
That's very true. But it's also an opportunity for out-of-state actors to purchase and run viable local media outlets. And you included an instructive graphic in your story that showed the out-of-state ownership of local media outlets across the state. And it showed that nearly half of all local media in Oregon are owned by folks who don't live here.
Yeah, that's right. And we see this all across the country, these big conglomerates who, you know, I think use the language of journalism and say they care about local journalism. At the same time, they buy these papers and then they lay off reporters, they lay off editors, and so less information is actually being gathered and given to the local audience because, you know, they see this as a business opportunity or a way to extract money from local communities. And I think, you know, I'm just speaking personally here. I don't personally view the news media that way. I think what we provide, and this is why I'm in the public media space like Jefferson Public Radio, is that what we provide is a service to the community. It's not about making as much money as possible. And I think a lot of these for-profit businesses see these newspapers as a way to quickly extract some dollars, and then you can sell it down the line as a distressed asset, essentially.
And ultimately, that leads to media deserts, and local
right.
people are impacted by that.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I spoke to one Ashland resident recently after my story came out, and he was someone who had actually worked for the LA Times as a travel and food writer, and even he was fooled by this Daily Tidings scam. And he, you know, I think he felt shocked by that this was being perpetrated on the local community. I mean, I think he kind of sensed something was wrong here, so he wasn't completely duped, but he also felt like, hey, I was driving around and I saw these paper boxes for the Ashland Daily Tidings up, and I thought this was a legitimate news source, which is a completely reasonable thought. I think the thing that's frightening for me is that news consumers have to be extremely savvy now even understand if they're being tricked, which is, they shouldn't have to do that.
So Ryan, you talked with Bert Ettling, the local editor of Ashland.news, about the impact of AI impersonation on local news media here. What'd he say?
Yeah, I talked to Bert because he used to actually be the editor of the Ashland Daily Tidings. And, you know, he told me that he was sort of saddened and shocked to see what had become of this website. You know, he told me something that I thought was really poignant, is that the local newspaper and the local media like JPR is essentially the community having a conversation with itself. And so when this website takeover happened, you essentially have someone who is coming in and pretending to be that community and putting bad information into that ecosystem and essentially polluting that river. So, you know, I think he was saddened and shocked by it, but also, much like yourself, he just cared about covering local journalism and said, hey, this isn't going to stop us from doing what we want to do here.
Well, in full disclosure, I spent 6 years at the Daily Tidings a while back and helped lead the transition from award-winning news print to award-winning digital production in 2009. Justin, your work was directly affected by this problem of phantom AI operators. Talk about that.
Yeah, so I moved here recently and started to work at JPR about a year ago now. And kind of the first things you do as a reporter if you move to a new region is kind of you get a list of local news sources to kind of see what the region's up to. And it's really an important tool for reporters to find stories, to add to stories, which I think we'll talk about more later. You know, we cover huge geographic area, and it's just helpful to see if we've missed something. So I came across the Daily Tidings, and that sort of raised some eyebrows with colleagues because they didn't even know it existed. And we kind of joked around at the time that it might be some AI site. You know, and I would read them occasionally, and I'd be like, oh, they covered a story that I covered. Yeah, and that's pretty normal. I mean, we're both covering Southern Oregon. And then when I actually read the story, though, I realized, wait, no, this is my story. So, you know, paragraphs would be moved around and some words would be very awkwardly changed, but it was close enough to be plagiarism. Which is a bummer. You know, we put a lot of work into stories, even the daily spots we do. You know, it's a minute on air, and then we'll have a longer web piece. But that takes work to first find a story that you're reporting on. It sometimes can take a whole day to track down the right sources. We have an editing process. We fact check to the best of our ability, and it just takes time. So, you know, that's what we're paid for. And it was just a bummer to see that my work was just being plagiarized. It was especially frustrating to see it was repackaged in such a sloppy way and that these stories were being shared on social media, so in Facebook groups and stuff around the Rogue Valley, and it didn't seem like some of these members had, you know, realized really what they were reading or where that came from.
Yeah, and that undermines the integrity and trust in local media.
Yeah, certainly. I would say, you know, getting plagiarized is bad. That's a bummer, but it would, in my opinion, be even worse to be one of these reporters who had their identity stolen because, you know, your face and your name would be attached to this sloppy, poorly written, you know, dribble. And that's online, that's maybe sticking around for a long time, and that can really hurt your credibility as a reporter. So at least that didn't happen to me, I guess.
My guests are OPB reporter Ryan Haas and JPR's own reporter Justin Higginbottom. We're talking about the hijacking of the Ashland Daily Tidings and the adverse impact of phantom AI operators on local journalism throughout Oregon. Ryan, your article raised an alarm about the vulnerability of local media to bad actors using AI technology and impersonating the work of local journalists. The newspaper industry but had already taken a serious hit, given the era of digital technology and the change in behavior of how people consume media. So what are your thoughts about how vulnerable local radio and television media might be to AI impersonation?
I mean, I think that's an interesting question. I think the technology is not necessarily there yet in terms of like audio production or producing a radio program. You know, I think there are ways, you know, there is AI technology out there that can impersonate those things, but I don't know if there's necessarily an audience for it. I mean, it's possible. I think the bigger area where this could impact broadcast as well as print productions is in the digital online space. I think we're seeing this even outside of these types of scams. You're seeing things like Google AI that's producing these AI summaries of news articles or information online so people don't actually visit the original source of that information. And so I think these companies don't really care if there is a local news media. And I think the danger there is that the local news media, and to a lesser extent, the national media, are the ones producing the original information that is sort of feeding the internet that then gets recycled through these AI programs. So you're essentially killing the golden goose is how I would phrase it.
And that takes time and it takes effort to actually create this content. And of course, that takes investment by the local communities that want to know. You know, they want to have trusted information and know what's going on in their communities. So the capitalization and exploitation of our work truly undermines the entire landscape. And I like the term, it pollutes. I think you said Bert Edling offered that.
Mm-hmm.
It's really tough. Justin, talk about the process that you and the JPR News team go through to produce the stories for JPR each week.
Well, yeah, and Ryan kind of brought this up, but you know, first just finding stories to report on. I think that can be a mystery maybe for listeners or readers. It was a mystery for me when I first started out in journalism, you know, how do you even find something to report on? And here we find them from a lot of ways. We get, you know, press releases, we go to public meetings, we search court records. Sometimes there's just random questions that we want answered, you know, personally, or you might run into someone at the grocery store who has a tip. But a big component is actually seeing what other local news is covering so that we might be able to add to it or see how that topic could apply to our region. And that's, you know, that's why local journalism is extremely important, because many times, I would say most times, stories will start at the local level and then kind of go up the chain to national or even international publications. So the New York Times isn't listening to Northern California Board of Supervisor meetings. They kind of will, I'm guessing, wait until local media kind of stumbles across a good story and then cover it, which can have possible implications for the entire nation, depending on the topic. So that's one of the huge reasons why local journalism is very important, and local real journalism, not just aggregations or AI journalism, because it has national implications. That's how people throughout the whole country figure out what's going on at a local level. That's where the news actually happens.
That's really important, because the relationships that you establish here on the ground and the interviews that you conduct, those are real.
Right.
And when you produce that news, it elevates and expands and creates an awareness throughout the region, throughout the state, and ultimately throughout the nation. So
yeah.
You're the tip of the spear.
Yeah, and it's very important. And without local news, you know, doing kind of the hard on the ground reporting, the nation as a whole would just lose out on so much information, very, very vital information about what's going on, especially in local government or crime, some beats that I cover. It's very important, and would be very depressing if local news went under.
And so now we're competing with these bad actors who have this powerful tool called AI.
Yeah.
So Ryan, Did you find anyone who offered solutions to help protect local journalists and media outlets from this growing competition?
You know, I think that is the million-dollar question is, like, what is the full answer here to make a sustainable local media? I've talked to quite a lot of people recently who read my story and, you know, read their local news outlets like JPR and say, like, hey, we want to find an answer here. I know lawmakers in Oregon had last session brought forward a bill that offered some perhaps funding ideas around local journalism. And I think that is really the key here. Like, what is the sustainable way to fund local journalism? And that is why I'm a big proponent of public media, because I think it offers the audience a chance to directly invest in their local news sources in a way that is authentic and, you know, holds us as the journalists accountable. We feel responsibility because we know, you know, John Doe in the community donates $20 a month or whatever. And so we want to do the best job we can. And as Justin said, it just takes time and effort to vet information and present facts. I hope that we can find a solution to avoid this problem in the future.
Well, I want to say that AI isn't the culprit. It's just a tool. And it can offer many benefits and efficiencies in the work of journalism as well. But bad actors can also use that tool with bad intentions. One of the things I don't think AI can replicate is what we do here at JPR at the end of every week. Can you talk about the debrief, Justin?
Yeah, so on Friday we'll have a debrief where we talk about the stories we covered, and those stories were not produced using AI. First, Biden designated a national monument in our backyard, so the Satitla Highlands National Monument. It covers over 200,000 acres in Northern California. That's actually an example of, rather than a story starting on the local level and going up to the national level, is what sometimes happens. Starts at the national level, then we get to figure out how that affects people on the local level. So that's another role we have, another role for local journalism. The ODF also released a finalized wildfire hazard map, which we've been covering for years at this point, this process. And then I'll also hopefully have a feature about the HODADs, a Cork and Oregon forestry labor history, where you had counterculture worker cooperatives doing a lot of the forestry work now. And that's part of a series we're doing about who's actually doing these labor-intensive forestry jobs like tree thinning or tree planting or reforestation work.
I never heard that term, the HODADs.
HODADs, yeah. It's named after the shovel they use to plant trees.
Okay, well, take that, AI.
Don't take it, AI.
No, exactly. Don't take that. So, Ryan, how is OPB addressing this issue and protecting itself?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we do have a team of lawyers here. I want to say that, you know, since my story came out, I've noticed that the Ashland Daily Tidings has perhaps stopped stealing quite as much work and is sort of doing more rewriting press releases and things like that. So I'm glad that impact has happened. And I hope it also just raised awareness that people who live in Southern Oregon and Northern California can turn to JPR or Ashland.news or some of these other local sites and get good information that way, and just be aware that there is bad information out there. And I think just generally, you know, OPB wants to support the local news ecosystem across the state. You know, we have a very good sharing partnership with our news and like with stations like JPR, where we use your news to inform our listeners up here in Portland area. And, you know, hopefully you can use our news at JPR to help inform about the issues that are happening around the state. And so I think the way forward is just for all of us to really care about local news and do everything we can to support it, because Oregonians and Northern Californians deserve good information.
Well, it sounds like we're all going to have to circle the wagons and protect the integrity and value of local media, local journalism. Thank you, Ryan. I appreciate you joining the show today.
You're welcome.
And thank you, Justin. Appreciate you coming in.
Thanks.